been searching for that time to get on some sort of a roll here to get that good feeling, and you need a game like this to give you a chance.
We're still struggling to try and score goals night in and night out, but we've been able to do that in the last couple games.
Jets have some life.
It doesn't get any easier, and as the season moves on, road games get tougher and tougher.
There's not an easy answer to that.
Second moves in, shoots, scores! How about that?
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Ezra, Dave, and Drew on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Shoved back in toward the corner there by Truba, came back toward the line, strike shot, scores! 38-year-old Mark Streit will hammer time one. I think it might have been deflected. Went off the glove of Hellebuck and in. And the Flyers have regained their two-goal lead. It's 3-1 Philadelphia.
That goal by Mark Streit on Thursday night proved to be the game winner as the Jets started their longest road trip of the season, a six-game road trip, falling in Philadelphia by a score of 5-2. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at tsn1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. Five-game road trip. Thank you, David. I said six-game road trip, and I saw your eyes go like, no, I don't think that's right. So, yes, five-game road trip. Apologies for misspeaking right off the start. We're off to a raucous start in that case. It's only going to go downhill from there. Alongside Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Menucom, your host, Drew Mindell. You can reach us in studio at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/illegalcurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is illegalcurve.com. Gentlemen, good to see you both. Ezzy, you're repping the Brock Cordon Bears Elementary School today.
Yeah, absolutely. Very proudly rocking Brock Cordon. It's a great t-shirt.
It is a good t-shirt.
Great logo.
Yeah, they're the Bears.
Very comfortable shirt.
Oh, good. I'm glad for you.
That's soft.
Yeah, not itching. There's no itching involved.
Nope,
shirt's not chafing 100% at all.
100% cotton, Drew.
Okay, yeah. Yep.
What's happening, guys?
Well, you know, living the dream, talking hockey with you boys. Dave's got a smirk on his face. Like, I can't believe I'm spending my Saturday morning with you two yutzes already. Anyways, let's get started. The Jets, as I mentioned, in the midst of a five-game road trip, in action tonight against the Boston Bruins, the second of the five-game trip. And then, of course, they head to Carolina tomorrow afternoon for a back-to-back contest in Raleigh against the Carolina Hurricanes. Things got off to a disappointing start on Thursday night as they lost to the Philadelphia Flyers by that 5-2 margin. A game where, from my estimation, the Jets were the better of the two teams, but the Flyers goaltender, Steve Mason, who's been much maligned this year for putting up some lousy numbers thus far, outplayed the Winnipeg Jets goaltender in Connor Hellebuck.
Yeah, Drew, as far as I'm concerned, it was pretty obvious that the difference in this game was Steve Mason. And you got to give the Philadelphia Flyers credit. I mean, they've got a good team there. But it was a pretty even game there. The Mark Streit goal was obviously the turning point. It was a goal that Connor Hellebuck wanted to have back. But if you remember earlier in the game, Patrick Laine had a great chance, point blank. Steve Mason stopped him. It was a great glove save. Nikolaj Ehlers had the breakaway. You know, he did the fake shot and, you know, didn't get, I think, the most of the shot on the breakaway. But certainly Steve Mason made some key saves in the game. The Jets had their chances. So, you know, they lose 5-2. You know, it's not the start that you wanted to the road trip, but it's not like, you know, you necessarily gave away a game or you didn't play well, Drew. So, you know, you've got a couple of really important games coming up this weekend and tough games because of the turnaround, Dave. You've got two games in 22 hours. Mm-hmm. You've got Carolina tonight early at 6 p.m.
Boston.
Winnipeg time. Pardon me, Boston at 6. And then you've got Carolina tomorrow at 4 in the afternoon. So you've got two tough games, and then you've got the Central games next week against Minnesota and Nashville. So you've got a couple of days break on Monday and Tuesday. Sorry, is it St. Louis? Nashville's
the
week after.
No, it's oh, it you're right. Nashville. It's Nashville, okay. And Minnesota.
There's so many games this month, it's tough to keep
they
track of.
They go to Minnesota on Wednesday, right. And then they go to Nashville on Friday, which is a bizarre sort of scheduling if you look at it geographically. I'm not sure why you'd go from Raleigh, North Carolina, which is sort of in the southeast of the United States, all the way back to Minnesota, and then back down to Nashville, which is obviously a lot closer to Raleigh than Minnesota is.
I'm assuming it had something to do with the schedule, because they have a Nashville home and home.
Yeah, I
so
mean
I, no, I agree with you. though, it does make a lot of sense to go back to Minnesota and then go over to Nashville and then come back to Winnipeg.
That's right.
So. But Dave, the point being, though, you know, you lose to Philadelphia, so you start off the road trip with a loss, but you don't have time to dwell on it because you've got back-to-back games here against Boston and Carolina, and then Minnesota and Nashville are starting to play well. Well, Minnesota had a good start to the season. Nashville didn't, and they're starting to play better. Guys like James Neal are starting to score. So you got to get right back at it, and you got to get a win tonight against Boston because you don't want to turn this into a losing streak here.
Yeah, and we all remember what happened last year when they went on that big road trip in November and they lost, I think, all four games, and it was pretty demoralizing. The team never really seemed to recover from it. So
yeah, if I recall correctly, those were all Central Division games last year in November, if I recall correctly, but don't quote me on that. But,
yeah, no, and exactly. And so you look at it and you think to yourself, well, tonight, you can't say this is a must win, but it really is. Like, I thought Thursday they got beat by a better goaltender. Steve Mason was unbelievable. I thought the Jets carried the play for a lot of the game, and I thought they had the majority of the really good quality chances. The Flyers just capitalized on the ones that they had, even if they weren't the best opportunities. And, you know, I think Connor Hellebuyck would admit that he wanted to have a few of those back. But, I mean, you go into tonight's game against Boston, tough team. And you're going to have to grind this one out. And sometimes, you know, a punch in the face to a team isn't the end of the world because the Jets may have been, you know, and, you know, Coach Maurice oftentimes preaches, you can't get too high, you can't get too low. So, you know, they were 4-0-1 in the previous five games. And then they come in, it's one loss. I mean, you can't act like the world is ending. And sure, it was 5-2, but that, you know, one of those is an empty net goal. And so it looks a little bit worse than it actually was because I thought the Jets actually carried a lot of that play.
And, guys, you're going to face some good goaltenders coming up. Tuukka Rask is playing like the Tuukka Rask of 2011 when the Boston Bruins won the Stanley Cup. You're going to face Devan Dubnyk next week. They might catch a break against Nashville if Pekka Rinne is still out of the lineup. But even Carolina, Cam Ward's been playing pretty well. Mm-hmm. So it's not like you're going to get any freebies here. So the next four games are very important. We talked about American Thanksgiving. It's coming up next Thursday. The Jets have had, I think, a good first 19 games here. But certainly out of these next four games, you'd ideally like to get points in three of these four games here.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you guys. You know, so you've lost the first game of the road trip. You now have four to go. What record do the Jets need to put up to make this a quote unquote successful road trip? Do you need to go, you know, 2-1-1 for this not to be a disappointing five game road trip?
Yeah, I would say you'd have to win at least two of these four games, Dave. Because, you know, you lost the first game against Philadelphia. I mean, if you come back from this road trip and you've won two of the five games, I don't think necessarily that that's, you know, going to change the season and, you know, the Jets aren't going to be a playoff team just because they only won two of five games. But certainly, if you're able to win three of five games as opposed to just two, you know, you're feeling a lot better about yourself. You're able to kind of stay above 500. I believe if they lost three of the next four, then they'd be under 500 based on, you know, wins, not necessarily, you know, winning percentage. But certainly you want to be, you know, in a position where you come back and you're where you were at least when you left, right?
Right.
And you were a couple of games above 500 when you left. So there's still a game above 500 here, Drew, but, you know, you want to win, you ideally want to win all four games.
Oh, sure, in
but,
an ideal world.
You know, put it this way, if you lose three of the next four games, you know, then you're putting yourself almost where you were before you beat LA and Chicago, right? Mm-hmm. So you don't want to lose that momentum that you gained from beating the Kings and Hawks at home.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, it's you can. Sorry, Dave, go jump in on there because I'm going to change the subject in a second to the Jets goaltending.
No. I was just going to say, like, I'm with Ez. I think, like, you just have to win. Ideally, obviously, they win three of four. And especially against the Central teams, like obviously the Eastern games are going to be tough, but like, you know, those aren't as critical, but you know, you can't afford to lose games and they've been good against the Central so far this year, mm-hmm. unlike last year, but they can't afford to lose games to Nashville and Minnesota. It's just as simple as that.
It seems fairly clear that Connor Hellebuyck has taken the reins as the Jets' number one goaltender. I mean, he's gotten the majority of the starts over the last, you know, 10 games. I think he's had seven starts to Hutchinson's one.
Yeah.
I don't yet know who's going to go tonight for the Jets, if it's going to be Hellebuyck or Hutchinson. We'll find out in the course of the show when they head for the game day skate.
Both of them are playing.
One's playing tonight, one's playing tomorrow. It's just a matter of one is playing when.
I would expect it to be Hellebuyck tonight.
Do you think they go back to Hellebuyck for another one?
Well, I believe Ken Weeb of the Winnipeg Sun asked him, asked Paul Maurice yesterday in the scrum, you know, is there an advantage to playing a goalie after a perceived, you know, not that the coach is going to admit it,
bad goal
or bad game, and getting him right back in there, or is there an advantage to you know, keeping him out. Of course, Coach Maurice Ass answered it with a question saying, that is the age-old question. So he really didn't want to tip his hand as
good
to what
insight
he...
there.
Yeah, exactly. So he didn't want to tip his hand as to what he was planning on doing with his goaltenders. But it is an interesting question. Would it be better for him to sit and be able to kind of reflect and watch Hutchinson and then get in for Carolina? Or do you throw him right back into the fire, force him to make some saves and be that guy for the team, you know, to really give them a chance to win in Boston, which is, again, a critical game on the road because you really have a chance to go 1-1 mm-hmm. and then start the road trip kind of over again.
Yeah, that's right. Then it becomes a best of three for the rest of the
that's
road
right.
trip as opposed to, you know, if you go down, you know, if you go down 0-2 in your first two games on the road trip, all of a sudden you're looking to get points in three straight games to, so, right. quote-unquote, salvage the road trip. Connor Hellebuyck spoke to the media yesterday after that game in Philadelphia where he gave up the bad goal. As a youth, found his comments pretty interesting. Let's play the clip. Let's roll Connor Hellebuyck from yesterday talking about giving up the bad goal to Mark Streit.
Can you tell us, take us through the long shot from Streit, how that one played out?
I'd rather not talk about that, actually.
Yeah. Tough one?
I wouldn't say tough. I didn't get my whole hand on it and pushed through my glove.
How do you manage the ups and downs, not just yourself, but kind of win-loss-wise? I know Paul talked yesterday about not getting too high when things were going so well, and mm-hmm. now you move forward as a team after the game last night.
Yeah, that's exactly what we got to do. Keep pushing forward, and it's one game. If we win the rest of this road trip, no one's going to even think about this game being a problem. It's just right now we're a little upset that we lost because we were on such a good streak.
How much have you enjoyed the opportunity to get on a little bit of a run here and get into a groove?
I loved it. I'm going to continue striving forward and keep climbing that mountain that I've been talking about all year.
You've had designs on wanting to be a number one, obviously. What's it like to get an opportunity to maybe kind of take the ball and run with it right now?
It's awesome. I got to continue getting better every day, and I got to prove that I belong there.
There's been a lot of talk this year about the schedule and how players manage it. No practice today, obviously. What's that like kind of as a pro now where you're not practicing as much as maybe you have in years past?
It's definitely different. Even in the AHL, you get a lot of practice time. But games like this, it's really more mental. You got to keep mentally strong, and you got to kind of go through a practice in your head almost. You got to make sure that everything is where it needs to be.
When you're not getting shots like that early, I mean, those are some of the exercises you do? Because, I mean, there's probably 9 or 10 minutes where, you know, the play was in the other end.
Yeah, you got to stay amped up, and you got to be ready because, you know, they're going to come and they're...
You know, I found the comments, particularly, you know, I think it was Jason Bell of the Free Press who
yep.
asked. So Jason Bell of the Free Press asked him about the Mark Streit goal. I'm not sure when Mark Streit's name turned into Mark Streit, but that's a separate issue altogether.
They actually named a street in Philly after Mark Streit. called
oh,
it Mark
okay.
Streit.
Yeah, Mark Streit.
Or
okay,
it was Streit Street.
Streit Street. Okay. In any event, I found Hellebuck's response to be... Is thin-skinned a little bit too strong of a statement to say that's how his response sounded?
Well, Drew, Connor Hellebuyck didn't talk to the media after the Flyers game, right? So, I mean, that was the first time the media had talked to Connor Hellebuyck after the game, after that goal. And, you know, good on Jason Bell for asking the question. I mean, it was a weak goal. I mean, Connor Hellebuyck, guys, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say that Connor Hellebuyck shouldn't start tonight. I mean, Connor Hellebuyck has been the Jets' best goalie this year. And Paul Maurice... you know, has decided to give Connor Hellebuyck the goal as far as the majority of the starts, right? He started 7 of the last 8 games, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and, you know, he didn't have his best game against Philadelphia, but, guys, he's coming off of a shutout against the Chicago Blackhawks. I mean, like, we can't start to throw guys under the bus after, you know, they have one bad game. I mean, Connor Hellebuck's a young goalie. He's 23 years old. This is his first full-time year in the NHL. You know, we forget, last year the Jets split the games between the three goalies. Andre Pavlik, Michael Hutchinson, Connor Hellebuyck, they split the games. If you look, it was pretty even,
yes.
right? And so this year, I mean, is his first year, Dave, for all intents and purposes, as the first goalie. Pardon me, the starting goalie. So, you know, I did find it interesting, Drew, because, you know, he did seem agitated there. And, you know, he could have just said, you know, well, it was a goal that I wanted to have back, which mm-hmm. he kind of says later. You know, he says it kind of went off my glove. I just didn't get all of it. But, you know, I thought it was also interesting when the question was asked about practice in the NHL versus the AHL. You typically get more practice time, Dave. You would know, you know, most of the games are on the weekends, or you have the back-to-back games in the American Hockey League. So, you know, it's, I think this is a key part of the season. These are part of the growing pains that we knew Connor Hellebuyck was going to experience, right? He had a bad game against Philadelphia. I would expect him to be in net tonight. He's going to go up against Tuukka Rask, and he'll probably have an awesome game.
Yeah, and I mean, look, again, it's in one game of 82, and you're sitting there, you're saying, okay, you, if you want to break it down, he didn't have his best game, but then, as you just said, and you're 100% right, he had an excellent game against Chicago. I was like, wow, okay, this is what you're used to seeing, what I saw a lot of in the AHL last year, what we saw flashes of in the NHL last year. So, you know, this is what fans could expect to see from Connor Hellebuyck. And, you know, look, I mean, he's a young kid. He's still learning how to navigate the NHL. I mean, he's 24. He's not that young, but he's relatively young in terms of being in the NHL. So that's not the first time we've heard him get agitated when asked about a goal. Generally, though, I believe it was like early in his career, like first or second game. Yeah, it led in a bad goal, and someone asked him, and he said, next question.
This was on the Moose or on the
Jets? No, this is with the Jets.
Okay.
No, I actually find, like, when the players with the Moose, I think there's a little bit less pressure in terms of, like, the attention, the scrutiny they're under.
Sure.
So in terms, no, because I, like, for example, going to, you know, just going to Eric Comrie, if you ask Eric Comrie about a goal, he'll tell you literally everything he's done, did wrong with it. He'll remember everything that happened in the goal, and he'll break it down for you. So I'm just saying, like, it's just a different sort of scrutiny with the AHL than the NHL. But Connor Hellebuyck, you know, I mean, he was right. That was right after the game. So you're like, okay, this is fresh. You know, and a lot of times, and
you're saying the first time when he said next question.
He said next question. And so you're like, all right, fine, whatever. But I the only reason why it was surprising to me was simply because this was the day after. So he'd already had a day to kind of, or, you know, 12, 13 hours to reflect on it, and then was being asked about it, and kind of had to expect that there was going to be a question about the goal, that goal against.
Particularly when he didn't meet the media after the game in Philadelphia. This was the media's first opportunity. It's not that, yeah. You know, I can understand him getting frustrated if he answered all the questions on Thursday night,
right,
and then Friday the questions came again, whereas they hadn't spoken to him on Thursday at all. So Friday is their first opportunity to ask him about it. I didn't think it was a fairly confrontational question
at all.
It was a question that any journalist is going to ask.
And it's not uncommon. I mean, Dave goes into the Jets room more than I do because I usually go in the visitor room at the MTS Center, but it's not common for guys on the Jets not to talk to the media. I mean, Tobias Enstrom is a guy that doesn't talk to the media a lot, for example.
Right.
And you expect the leadership, Mark Scheifele, Blake Wheeler, Dustin Byfuglien this year, now that he's an A, you expect these guys to talk to the media. It used to be Andrew Ladd, Brian Little, right? So, I mean, and Brian Little would be a guy when he's back, you'd expect him as a leader to talk to the media. But, I mean, in that clip that we played of Connor Hellebuyck, hockey players are competitive. Connor Hellebuyck might be more competitive than your average hockey player. I mean, you can tell, you can hear it, that this guy wants to stop every puck. So, you know, I mean, and that's a good thing. I mean, he is maybe a little bit too hard on himself sometimes, but he's a guy that wants to get back out there and have a better game. So, I mean, this is just part of, you know, learning how to play in the NHL as a young goaltender, as far as I'm concerned.
The Jets will get back out there and try and have a better game tonight as they meet the Boston Bruins. We yet don't know who's going to be in goal, but we'll preview the Jets and the Bruins and the Jets and the Hurricanes coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
On the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Trying to go on in his off wing. Gets inside the zone. Put it out in front. It goes off the stick of Enstrom. They score. Boston gets a 2-1 lead with a late goal here off one of the Jets' D-men.
From 1 month ago, thereabouts at MTS Center, the Jets lost to the Boston Bruins. The game-winning goal, unfortunately, deflected in off Toby Enstrom close to the end of the second period. The Jets look for the revenge tonight in Boston as the Jets and the Bruins will do battle. And, of course, tomorrow as well, they'll be in action in Carolina to face the Hurricanes. Both games available here on TSN 1290. The Jets and the Bruins. The Bruins off to a good start this season. Particularly the goaltender. Tuukka Rask is off to a great start. The Bruins, I think, are better than their record would indicate. They're a straight 10-7 so far, which right now has them on the outside looking in of a playoff spot. But
Yeah, but they're 1 point out, right?
Yeah, so they're very close. And the way Tuukka Rask has been playing, you know, for the last couple of years, I've sort of seen a bit of a downturn in Tuukka Rask's numbers. Well, Tuukka Rask is 10-2 so far this year, sporting a 947 goals against average. Pardon me, a 947 save percentage and a 1.49 goals against average. I mean, the Boston Bruins don't score a lot, but they certainly don't give up a lot of goals either. They are seventh in the league in goals for with 41. And then if you look at their goals against, they're sixth in the league with 39. Tuukka Rask on fire lately. So the Jets, assuming Rask is in net, are going to have a big task ahead of them in trying to solve the Finnish netminder.
Yeah, Drew, I would agree with your assessment. I mean, Tuukka Rask the last couple of years has certainly not been, I would say, a top 10 goaltender in the NHL. In the years previous to that, we talked about it last segment. I mean, it seems like so long ago, guys, but it was really only 6 years ago that this Boston Bruins team won the Stanley Cup back in 2011, beating the Canucks in that epic series, which caused a few people to light cars on fire, unfortunately. but, you know, Tuukka Rask, you just said it. I mean, 947 save percentage, 1.49 goals against average, Drew. I mean, you could argue right now, with the exception of Carey Price, Tuukka Rask has been the best goalie in the NHL. I mean, Corey Crawford, I would say, is in that conversation as well. But, I mean, what else can you say? I mean, he has been fantastic. And you mentioned the scoring. I mean, they still have guys that could score here, Drew. To me, what has been probably the most surprising, Patrice Bergeron, I know he missed a few games here early in the season, but he's only got 4 points in 14 games. He's the top center for the Boston Bruins, and you know, you've been getting, you know, obviously a lot of offense from Brad Marchand, kind of continuing, Dave, what he was doing at the World Cup, playing with Bergeron and Crosby on that top line. But I mean, they have balanced scoring here. You know, you've got that second line, David Backes, in his first year with the Bruins, playing with David Krejci and Ryan Spooner. That line's been good. And, you know, David Pastrnak is a guy, you know, maybe he doesn't have the offensive numbers that some thought. He's still been, you know, scoring at a pretty decent rate.
He's got 10 goals already this year. I mean, and this is a young player, Pastrnak. He was a former first-round pick. Back in 2014, late first round pick, and he's certainly come into the lineup.
Well, and that puts him top five in the league as far as goals go. So, I mean, they have guys. To me, Drew, the biggest weakness with this team is still defense. I mean, gone are the days where Zdeno Chara plays 30 minutes a game and kind of absolutely dominates the opposition. So, this is certainly a team that is a beatable team, but it's certainly going to be a difficult test because the Bruins, even though they might not be as physical as they once were, you know, with guys like Milan Lucic and Sean Thornton those days, this is still a tough team to play against. They do still play quite a physical, heavy game.
Worth noting about Pastrnak, he has been he's been out of the lineup with a day-to-day injury. We don't yet know if he's going to play tonight for the Bruins. Obviously, for the Jets' perspective, not having David Pastrnak in the lineup for the Bruins would take their leading goal scorer out of the lineup. He's the only guy on the Bruins team who has in double digits in goals. In fact, the next closest guy, Pastrnak, has 10 goals. The next highest goal scorer is Brad Marchand with 5. So you take Pastrnak out of the lineup, you take a fair chunk of the Bruins' goals out of the lineup. Dave, you know, anything on tonight's game or tomorrow night's game against the Carolina Hurricanes at the same time?
Well, the person I'm interested in watching is this Brandon Carlo. I mean, there was a lot of rumors about him and Jacob Trouba and whether there was going to be a big trade with the Jets and the Bruins. And
young defenseman on the Bruins, Brandon Carlo.
Yeah, and he's, you know, he's a first-round pick. I think first round.
Second round.
I was going to say maybe the second round, actually. But anyway, so he's you know, he's a towering guy, and he's one of those players that
he's a good defenseman, Dave.
Yeah, that people were thinking, like, is there a potential that there may be a trade between the Jets and the Bruins? And that he was the piece that people were talking about. It'll be interesting to watch him play tonight, see what all the talk was about. But I kind of echo what, you know, you guys have been saying, is that I think this is going to come down to goaltending. And if it is Hellebuck, you know, you're going to have a hell of an effort to really, you know, show he needs to show his team that the confidence that they've placed in him is well-founded. Because at the same time, like, look, we all agree that the Jets were the better team in Philly. I mean, I'm not saying by leaps and bounds, but I thought that they were the better team. I thought they had the better chances. And I thought Steve Mason, you know, stole the game for Philadelphia. The Jets need a goaltender that is going to steal a game for them sometimes. Because right now, I think, like, they're getting their chances offensively. Defensively, they've been okay. Like, I didn't think, you know, like, again, they weren't giving up great quality chances. Like, the scoring chances, you know, the one that Raffle scored, that was a nice play by Reed to get the puck over. The defense was a little bit, I think Bufflin was out of position. Morrissey was trying to cover. But, you know, for the most part, defense has been okay. The Jets just need the goaltending to be solid. I mean, that's all you need. You need solid goaltending. If you're going to get efforts like that from your forwards and you're going to score the goals at the rate the Jets generally do, then you just need the goaltender to keep the puck out of the net when they should.
And that'll be an especially large premium tonight when you're playing a team like the Boston Bruins, who are stingy in terms of what they give up in goals against. You know, it's not like a team like, you know, Philadelphia, for example, plays a much more open style. The Jets, you know, had their scoring chances, weren't able to take advantage of them. I would be surprised, very surprised, if there was that many scoring opportunities this evening between the Jets and the Bruins, given the way the tight checking style the Bruins play.
I was going to say, the one thing about the Bruins is they don't score a lot of goals.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, as you just illustrated, Drew, with their goal scorers, especially with David Pastrnak out of the lineup, you know, the next closest guy is Marchand with 5. And then most of their guys have 3-4. Backus, I think, has 3. And then, you know, Dominic Moore has 4. Yeah. And then most of the guys have 2. So you're looking at all these guys who don't have and if you look at their last few games, like 1-0 against Minnesota, 2-0 against Colorado, 2-1 against Arizona. So most of their games are low scoring. So if the Jets can get on the board early and necessarily often, then, you know, you at least get 2-3 on the board. You've got a good chance to win the game.
And we've seen in the last couple weeks, Dave, how well the Jets have played when they get the lead and they're not trailing. Right. Even though earlier in the season they were picking up wins against Carolina and Toronto at home when they were down 3 goals, right? And mm-hmm. and they've kind of stopped doing that, and now this is a lot more sustainable. So I agree with you. The Boston Bruins don't give you a lot. I think this game is going to be, Drew, a lot similar to last weekend's game against L.A. When the Jets had to pull out a 3-2 win in the shootout. This is going to be one of those games where you can't expect to score 4 or 5 goals. You know, not to say that the Jets can. I mean, Patrick Laine, Nikolaj Ehlers, Mark Scheifele, these guys can score at a pretty high rate. They're top of the league. But when Tuukka Rask is playing like this, I mean, he doesn't give up many goals. So, you know, it's going to be a very big challenge tonight.
More on the Boston Bruins coming up next with their voice, Jack Edwards. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Ezra, Dave, and Drew return on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN 1290.
The bottom of the hour has come and gone, but the Illegal Curve Hockey Show remains going strong. Welcome back to the program. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Minuke with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Jack Edwards. Jack is the play-by-play voice of the Boston Bruins on NESN, the New England Sports Network. Jack, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
It's good to be with you again, guys.
Yes, Jack, thank you for giving us the time on this Saturday morning, a game day, the Jets and the Bruins in action in about 8.5 hours' time, give or take at that point. Bruins are, you know, off to an interesting start to the year. We saw them in Winnipeg right at the beginning of the year. You know, I think it was 2 or 3 games in. They're 10-7 since then, but Tuukka Rask has absolutely been the driving force behind this team, putting up tremendous numbers. Is it safe to say that Tuukka Rask is keeping the Bruins afloat while the team tries to find their offensive legs to start the season?
Well, if there is a sequel to the 2016 season, Carey Price, and we hope that it isn't followed by a season-ending knee injury, Tuukka Rask is it, because this team's confidence and its ability to play well in front of a goaltender is all about Tuukka Rask's performance. You know, Rask said something interesting to us before the season began, and we asked him the question, you know, where are you in your career right now? Where do you feel you are? Because he has really had 2 seasons that have been lackluster in a row. And last year, clearly he was trying to do too much, and they were asking him to do too much, and his game broke down, and he started letting in bad goals. And when that starts happening, it doesn't matter how good the goalie has been, you wonder what kind of a future he might have. And usually when we pose those kinds of questions, we're pessimistic. But Rask said, you know, I'm turning 30, and this is the time the goalies usually start to play at their best. So I think my best years are just about to begin. And it took us aback a little bit. You know, it was kind of an out-there thing to say for a goalie who's had 2 seasons in a row that haven't been really stellar. But he has been awesome. I mean, he has stolen a couple of games already, which he didn't do really all of last season. He's been a shutout-type goalie, I mean, you know, he should have shut out Minnesota the other night. They came within 45 seconds of it. It was just a crazy bounce off of a defenseman's leg that ended up being the only goal of the game. He's been sensational. And when you step back and think about big picture and how Boston's trying to insert so many young players into important positions on this team, that has just been of immense value. That goes way beyond this season, because a guy like Brandon Carlo mm-hmm. has been able to make mistakes and be forgiven for them by his goalie being just tremendous. And Zdeno Chara has been able to change his role into a guy who is just a stopper defenseman, which has in turn solidified Torrey Krug's ability to become a solid second pair defenseman, something that a lot of people didn't think he could be. So, you know, there's a chain reaction, and it's all positive, and it all starts with Rask, as you pointed out.
Jack, David Backes was the Bruins' big free agent signing, and you know, I think big in a couple of senses, not only the amount of money that he was given, but because David Backes is a big centerman. How do you think he's fit in with this Bruins team so far? I know he's struggling a little bit to put the puck in the net. He's got 3 goals in 12 games there, but how has he fit into this lineup and as far as the style of hockey that the Bruins play?
As advertised, and he's an organic fit to this system. He's first, very hard to play against, always has been, and that hasn't changed a bit. He's always been defensively responsible, which is vital if you're going to play for Claude Julien, because if you lose Claude's trust by not honoring the system, you're not going to get much ice time. The lack of goals doesn't really bother Bruins fans. Certainly everybody on the team has been struggling offensively in the last few games. They just got through a 3-game road trip in which they scored just 3 goals, but, you know, managed to, or I guess it was 4 goals, but they managed to win 2 of the 3 games. Backes is a guy who's had an instant impact in the dressing room. He plays the game the right way. And if you think about what happened back on free agency day, the Bruins let Louis Erickson go to Vancouver, and he ended up getting one more year at the same money Backes is getting. So the Bruins got one less year of commitment. But really what they did was they made a stylistic change. And this is to take nothing away from Louis Erickson, who is an excellent NHL player. But Louis changes games with deftness and with subtlety and with finesse. And Backes changes games by knocking someone on his ass right in front of the goal. And that sends a message that seems to resonate better in the Bruins organization than the finesse plays did with Louis. And again, I'm not taking anything away from Louis. You know, there are places where the Bruins really miss him, especially that low play on the power play, where he was so effective, especially in the first 20 games last year. But, you know, I think that the stylistic change to Backes has been an improvement for the team.
Jack, with David Pastrnak out of the lineup, the Bruins moved Riley Nash to Patrice Bergeron's right wing. How did that move go for, how did it look for the Bruins?
Well, Riley Nash is a player who's got a really good stick. He's a guy who really is hard to play against, especially in the back half of the ice. He produces a lot of turnovers. He doesn't have a high offensive end. So you go from a guy who's leading the team by a multiple of 2 in goal scoring, David Pastrnak, who has 10 goals to the next closest player's 5, to Riley Nash, who's a good digger, but certainly not in the scoring class of David Pastrnak. And it puts more pressure on Patrice Bergeron and Brad Marchand to be able to produce. Nash is going to give them the puck, but Nash probably isn't going to finish off too many chances unless the other two guys do something sensational, set him up for a tuck. Riley Nash is a terrific bottom six forward. I'm not sure if he's going to be a top six forward on a consistent basis at any point in his NHL career. It's not to say that he's not useful on this team, but the Bruins clearly would rather have Pastrnak healthy tonight, which it looks like from the lines at morning skate, he is not.
Jack Edwards, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, discussing the Boston Bruins. Jack is the voice of the Bruins on the New England Sports Network, just reporting that by the looks of it at the morning skate, David Pastrnak likely not in the Bruins lineup tonight as they meet the Winnipeg Jets. Jack, Jimmy Hayes was acquired from the Panthers last season and, you know, put up almost 30 points, double digits in goals with 13. He's got 0 points in 15 games so far this year. He's a local Boston kid. He's huge, 6'6". I mean, everything about this should be a good story. How short is the leash getting for Jimmy Hayes in the Bruins lineup?
Really short. You know, that may even be Claude's fist inside the collar. you know, Jimmy's a great kid, and everybody wants to see him do well, but the players still have to do it. And my gut feeling is that if Jimmy Hayes just worked his butt off on every single shift, knocked a couple of guys down every single game, maybe gotten the odd scrap and scored 10 goals a year, he'd be a hero forever in this town. I don't think people are expecting him to score 20 goals every year. I don't think people are even expecting to score 15 goals each year. But what they're demanding of him is to work his tail off. And, you know, maybe it's not a matter of working harder. It's a matter of working smarter and to put himself in position where he's able to make more plays. You know, like Riley Nash is a guy who puts himself in position to make plays. He's waiting for the puck, and he, you know, lays in wait in a passing seam, and all of a sudden, that pass that looked really good coming out of the defensive zone for the opponent turned into a bad turnover. If Jimmy can play that kind of game and use his huge body to his advantage, I think Bruins fans will be satisfied. But it has been an ugly experience. The count is now at 31 going back to last season. 31 consecutive games without a point and one goal and minus 15 in his last 38 games. And that's, you know, we're talking half a season there. And that's just not acceptable for anybody on any line on any NHL team.
Obviously, he'd be frustrated. How is he handling the spotlight and this terrible streak? I mean, you know, to go 31 games without a point for a guy, you know, who, you know, he had a pretty decent pedigree when he came over to the Bruins and, you know, when he was drafted by the Panthers.
I think he was actually drafted by Toronto, believe it or not.
Right, sorry.
I think it's very difficult for him. You know, I think it's really hard to be in this situation as opposed to being with the Florida Panthers 2 years ago where, you know, it didn't matter if you went on an 8-game goal-scoring streak or, you know, you hadn't scored a goal in 31 games, you go out to dinner and nobody recognizes you either way. Well, in Boston, Jimmy Hayes can't go a block without saying, "Hey, Jimmy." And of late, it's probably been, "Hey, Jimmy, when are you going to start scoring?" You know, and people in Boston, as you know, are like that. You know, we're not afraid of a little bit of confrontation, even if it's in a good-natured spirit. And I think it's really hard for him. And you know, it may turn out he's one of those guys that can't thrive in his hometown because it is literally too close to home. So, I don't know. It's going to sort itself out. They got a lot invested in him. He's $2.3 million on the cap. He's got another year to go. So, you know, there are some hard decisions that they're going to have to make about him because he's a good kid. He really tries hard, but nothing's working right now. He's got to find a different way to succeed in the National Hockey League.
Jack, Bruins number one center Patrice Bergeron's had a rough start to the season offensively, 4 points in 14 games, and everybody on this radio show is a big fan of Patrice Bergeron, and how could you not be? The way he played at the World Cup of Hockey on that top line with Brad Marchand and Sidney Crosby, I think he's still, if not the best two-way center in the game, he's certainly a top three two-way center up there with guys like Jonathan Taves and Anze Kopitar. Is he just off to a slow start to the season? Did that injury earlier affect him? And are we, you know, expecting him to start putting the puck in the net a little bit more here going forward?
There's no question that he's compromised right now. And we never got any detail on the injury, which happened on media day, the last day of training camp, Well, it was actually after the formal practice had ended when the players are just taking optional work, and he was working on one-timers. And our producer, Brian Zicello, was looking right at him when it happened, and nobody else saw it. I mean, literally nobody else saw it. And he seemed to catch an edge, and then his leg buckled underneath him, and he tried to stand up on that leg, and it wouldn't support his weight, and he turned and went right off the ice. He was not available that day, missed the first three games, which were all on a road trip, and he hasn't been the same since. And he's he's still a tremendous player in the back two-thirds of the ice, and he's been effective in the attacking zone as well, and functioning well as the bumper on the power play, where now he gets immense attention from every single team because of his effectiveness there. But clearly he's compromised. He does not have the top gear that he's always displayed. He's not able to execute leverage along the boards when he needs to, so he has to win the puck in more clever ways. A couple of games, he's really had disappointing face-off results, and you got to wonder if that's related to what we think is a leg injury, and, you know, is either a knee or an ankle. But, you know, nobody's told us, and the team's not offering any information. But they depend on him massively. And the recovery of David Krejci from off-season hip surgery is crucial. It's given the Bruins a little bit of diversity in scoring, so it takes some pressure off of him. But, you know, the Pastrnak injury puts it right back on. So, you know, there we are. It's professional hockey, and the schedule doesn't wait for you to heal. You got to go out there, and Bergeron always has shown that he's willing to go out there, even if it's at the risk of his career.
Jack, a lot of fans here in Winnipeg know of the name Brandon Harlow simply because he was, you know, there was Jacob Trouba talk and whether there'd be a trade for those two defensemen. What has he done in his rookie season with the Bruins that's garnered so much attention from outside media?
How do you like Colton Parayko?
Like him a lot. We see him a lot with the Blues when they visit here.
Yeah, sure. Carlo isn't as dynamic offensively as Parayko is and even was during his rookie year. But I believe that's because Claude Julien has told Brandon and Zdeno Chara, listen, you got to just take care of the back half of the ice. This is your rookie year in the National Hockey League. Get to know your opponents. Get to know situations. Understand what to do and when to do it. And as Julien first did with the Bruins back in 2008, he gave them more freedom up the ice as they demonstrated it from the goal out. And I think that's what we're going to see with Carlo. Make no mistake about it. This guy is the next stud horse. He is the heir apparent to Zdeno Chara as the leader of this D-Corps. The Bruins anticipate that Charlie McAvoy is going to come out of Boston University next year. He was their first-round draft choice. He is a brilliant talent. And McAvoy potentially could make this team next year. If you have Carlo and McAvoy on the same team, you've got a defensive nucleus for two top pairs that could last you a good 10 or 12 years. I mean, that should make any Bruins fan really optimistic. Carlo has been sensational in his rookie year in the way that Bruins fans expect a young defenseman, to be sensational, which is just keep it clean. Be as unnoticed as you can be while you're accumulating 22-plus minutes of ice time per game, which leads all rookies in the National Hockey League. The guy's plus 11. I mean, or I guess he's plus 10 after the Minnesota game. But, you know, that's just a tremendous number for a player who's going into the 18th game of his NHL career. He's a bright kid, a humble kid, a really hard-working player, and perhaps the most impressive thing about Carlo that we've seen is that he does not make the same mistake twice. Every defenseman makes mistakes. Zdeno Chara still makes mistakes. You know, he's 19th year in the league, and Carlo's 19 years old, and Carlo makes those mistakes, but he doesn't repeat them. He learns from them, and that is the kind of humility and willingness to be coached and coached up that gives people such an optimistic view of Carlo's future with this team.
Jack Edwards is the Boston Bruins voice, play-by-play announcer on the New England Sports Network. Jack, really appreciate your time on game day. Have a good call tonight between the Jets and the Bruins. We always appreciate your time.
I'm looking forward to seeing Trouba tonight. We didn't see him the first time around. I'm glad you guys finally got that together and talked Chevy into signing.
No, yeah, we had a lot to do with it, I assure you. Thanks, Jack. Appreciate it, buddy.
Thanks a lot, Jack.
Thanks, guys.
Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we start our analysis of Mark Scheifele among the NHL's best centermen.
Legal Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
It's picked up by Wheeler. He'll march in across the line for Scheifele. A shot, he scores! Jets win! Jets win! Jets win! In overtime!
Mark Scheifele of the Winnipeg Jets, currently tied with Nikita Kucherov atop the points total list in the entire NHL. 22 points for Mr. Scheifele in 19 games played. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Shortly before 10 in the morning, this segment brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com or check out their new showroom located at 982 Portage Avenue, the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. Gentlemen, we're going to spend the next number of segments in, you know, we got some interviews as well interspersed, but spend the next number of segments discussing Mark Scheifele among the NHL's top centermen. We're going to go team by team. I'm not sure where Ezzy got all these chips from all of a sudden, but Ezzy somehow comes back with chips. We're going to go team by team and say, would you rather have Winnipeg Jets' number one center, Mark Scheifele, or would you rather have that team's top centerman? We'll start in the Eastern Conference, in the Metropolitan Division, the New York Rangers. You can probably argue that their top two centermen are Derek Stepan and Mika Zibanejad. Would you rather have Stepan or Zibanejad or Mark Scheifele atop your as your number one center?
Well, that's by the way, I love this segment that you came up with here, Drew.
Thank you.
Because there has been a lot of talk early on in the season about where Mark Scheifele ranks amongst the top centers, and I'd take Mark Scheifele over both of those centers, Drew. Derek Stepan is an excellent player. He's been a really good centerman for the New York Rangers for a long time, Dave, especially in the playoffs. If you go back to the season where the Rangers went up against the LA Kings in the final, that was 3 years ago. Very dynamic player. And Mika Zibanejad's also got a lot of talent, but he's still, 23 years old, and he's trying to establish himself as a top center in the NHL. So, I mean, those are good players, but Mark Scheifele right now, I mean, we've talked so much about it. You just mentioned it, Drew. I mean, Mark Scheifele's tied for the lead league in points. And I think we should also note here that, Mark Scheifele still has room to grow in his game here. I mean, he's trying to get better on faceoffs. He's trying to get better defensively. But overall right now, with what he brings offensively, starting off, I'll take Scheifele over both Stepan and Zibanejad.
Yeah, I mean, I think it really depends on what you're looking for. But if you're going to quantify it as if you're looking for an offensive guy who's going to put the puck in the net, I think I'm going to go with Mark Scheifele.
Yeah, and Scheifele and Zibanejad were both drafted in the first round in 2011.
Moving on to the Washington Capitals, they also have two very impressive centermen.
Yeah. Well, we can take one off the board right now. I mean, Scheifele's not better than Backstrom.
Oh, well, let me say who the centermen are, first of all. Nicholas Backstrom,
yep,
and Evgeny Kuznetsov.
Yep.
So the question I was going to have, Nicholas Backstrom, 29 years old, Mark Scheifele, younger than that, obviously. Would you rather have Mark Scheifele right now, or would you rather have Nicholas Backstrom? And you can throw Kuznetsov in the argument there as well, but I assume you'd rather have Scheifele than Kuznetsov.
And it's not so much as who would you rather have, because, I mean, I would rather have Mark Scheifele and all the intangibles as far as leadership and work ethic and all that.
Who's a better centerman,
I mean,
then?
Backstrom's a better centerman at this point in his career. I mean, Backstrom and Ovechkin have been two of the most dangerous offensive players in the NHL for the last 10 years. Backstrom, you're talking about a guy who regularly has 70 assists, right? So, mm-hmm. I mean, Scheifele's better than Kuznetsov. I mean, Kuznetsov was horrible in the playoffs last year for Washington. But, I mean, when you're talking about Nicholas Backstrom, you're talking about, as far as I'm concerned, a top 10 center in the NHL, and maybe even top five. Not to say that at the end of this we might say that Scheifele isn't a top 10 center, but certainly, Drew, Backstrom's a guy that with Ovechkin has regularly been around the 80 or 90 point mark. And Scheifele might hit that this year, but this would be the first year he's hit that. So I'm going to say Scheifele's better than Backstrom, better than Kuznetsov, but Backstrom's better than Scheifele.
Dave, any quibble with Ezzie's argument there?
No, I mean, it's solid. I mean, it's a hard one to it's a hard argument to make against going against a guy with the pedigree of Backstrom. I mean, I think Kuznetsov, I would take Scheifele over Kuznetsov, but I would go. It's a tough one because, I mean, especially if you look at what he does, like as he says, he puts up 50, 60 assists every year, obviously playing on the line with Ovechkin, but he also puts in about 20 goals.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's not like he doesn't score as well. And, I mean, he's got a deceptively lethal shot. And so, I mean, I'm probably going to give the edge to Backstrom simply based on the fact that, you know, he's just got a little more of the intangibles than Scheifele.
And, guys, this is point in time, right? We're looking at Scheifele right now. We're not looking at Scheifele's potential. I mean, Scheifele could hit 100 points.
We're looking at today, who would you rather have? And pretend that the season and the NHL dissolves after today. There's no more NHL tomorrow onwards.
Well, let's not say that because then our radio show wouldn't exist.
Well, it could. We
still have a Moose one because, all Drew said was the AHL, the NHL, not the NHL.
That's true. Or we could become a fishing show. Dave enjoys a good fish every
now and then. I do. I love fishing.
And I did catch a 24.5-inch walleye this year.
And win, lose, or drew on in curling last night. So, you know, we could do a curling and fishing show.
Okay.
It's a very niche market, let me tell you.
Let's go to the next
team on the list in the Metropolitan Division, Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin of the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Well, right. And I can't – well, Sidney Crosby is the best center in the league. So nobody's going to say that Mark Scheifele is better than Sidney Crosby, right? And you know, the Malkin versus Scheifele is a more interesting one, guys, because Evgeny Malkin, if you look at his career numbers, I mean, he is not putting up the 90-100-point seasons like he did earlier in his career, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Malkin used to lead the league in scoring or finish top three or five in the earlier part of his career, and he started to – those numbers have started to go down a little bit, but, I mean, he's won two Stanley Cups, right? So, I mean, the guy's a winner. I'm going to say, you know – obviously, Crosby's better than Scheifele at this point in his career. But I'll take Scheifele over Malkin.
That's the, I would say, the first overwhelmingly controversial call you've made, Dave.
Well, I mean, with all due respect to Mark Scheifele, I don't think he's ever going to hit the Sidney Crosby level. So
the question is really about Evgeny Malkin or Mark Scheifele right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's so hard to say because Scheifele's on the rise, and you'd say that Malkin's kind of towards the end, not the end of his career, but like he's in the mid part of his career. You know,
he's been injury riddled the last number of years,
but he's having a good year so far. He's got 8 goals, 7 assists so far for Pittsburgh in 17 games, so he's been solid this year. I'm gonna go toss up. Like it's really to me.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a toss up one. I have to say, like you know, I mean, Malkin's. It's not like he's played with Crosby every single game, so he's done a lot on his own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, he's still a dynamic player. He's still a dynamic scorer. Still has, you know.
You can't. There's no toss-ups here. You can't sit on the fence.
Fine, I'm going with Malkin.
You're going with Malkin over Scheifele. Right. Ezzie, you're going with Scheifele over Malkin. Okay, so that's the first sort of divergence so far. Let's pause this. We're going to come back to it throughout the course of the program. Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press is going to come and join us. He's covering the Moose. He's covering the Jets. Maybe we've been arrested for a crime we don't know about. He might cover that as well. Mike McIntyre of the Free Press up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the Curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Minuk with you here on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us in studio. Facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome a man to the program who covers both the Winnipeg Jets and the Manitoba Moose for the Winnipeg Free Press. Mike McIntyre, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us. Mike, are you there?
I am. Great to be here. Thanks, guys.
Thank you for joining us, Mike. Appreciate you joining us on this Saturday morning. I guess we got to start before we get, you know, deeper into the two teams you cover. Obviously, you're probably most well-known in the city of Winnipeg for all your excellent work for so many years on the crime beat in and around the city for the Free Press. What's it like making the transition from, you know, crime and the world of criminals and justice to on-ice crime, you know, potentially occurring between hockey players?
Well, it is it's nice when the only infractions now that I really tend to cover usually result in either a 2 or a 5 minute trip to the penalty box, and not something much more serious. It's been great. I get yelled at a lot less. People seem to be generally more happy to be around. You know, athletes, of course, they can be picky and prickly at times. But when you've spent a couple decades surrounding yourself with the criminal element, it's definitely a nice change of pace. It's funny, Pascal Vincent, coach of the Manitoba Moose, every time he sees me now, whether it's at a morning skate or a practice, he's come up with quite a funny nickname for me. He'll say, "Hey, Crime Scene is here." So I guess that's my new nickname, Crime Scene. No police tape to be found, though, at the MTS Center or the Iceplex. So, yeah, it's been a great change of pace, and it's something that I had wanted to sort of dabble in for quite some time, and the timing has been perfect. So, and it's an interesting year to be following, especially the Moose. I don't know if any of us predicted that we'd see so many Moose players up with the Jets this early, but definitely been a fun year so far to cover.
You know, Mike, we want to get into the Manitoba Moose with you as well later, but we're going to start with the Winnipeg Jets. The Winnipeg Jets, of course, are in Boston to play the Bruins. They've got a couple of important back-to-back road games here. What were your thoughts on the game against Philadelphia? And the way, Connor, we were talking about it in the first segment, you know, Connor Hellebuyck was really hard on himself. He obviously wanted especially that Mark Streit goal back, and he didn't have his best game. But as far as that Flyers game was concerned, was that just Steve Mason outplaying Connor Hellebuyck?
It wasn't. If you look at Steve Mason's numbers, I mean, he's not exactly a goaltender who has set the NHL on fire, maybe other than his rookie season, but he always seems to play well against the Jets. I think his career numbers are fantastic against both the Jets and the Thrashers going back to their days. But, yeah, I mean, the Jets definitely got out-goaltended for one night anyways. You know, and I hate to be the guy who after the fact says, "I sort of saw this coming," but I sort of saw this coming. The Jets, of course, had been on a nice little roll. Sometimes that first game of a road trip, you know, can be a tough one. I think Philly was quite a motivated team coming into that game. Obviously, with what their coach did with Gostisbehere, you know, sending a bit of a message, and I think the Flyers seem to have got the message. That being said, the Jets certainly had a very winnable game on their hands the other day, even after they got behind early. I think anybody that's watched the Jets this year knows that a little adversity early in a game doesn't seem to really affect them. And I think we were all kind of expecting them to pardon the pun, turn on the Jets in the third period. You know, they were only down a goal. They had generally played pretty well. Their goaltender had let in at least one really questionable goal. But That push that we've all come to expect in the third period, it just really wasn't there, at least not as it translated on the scoreboard. And I think maybe that was the most surprising thing of all. I wouldn't put too much stock into it. It seems, you know, hearing some quotes from the players and the coach, I don't think anybody's sweating it too much. You know, this weekend is going to be interesting with these back-to-backs. The Jets have actually fared very well this season. Correct me if I'm wrong, guys. I think they're 3-0. On the back end of a road back-to-back so far this year, which is quite amazing.
Yeah, they are, Mike.
So, I mean, they're going to have their hands.
Or maybe 2-1.
2-0-1. They lost that game
They lost
in Colorado.
I was remembering Nick Ehlers scoring, but I have to keep reminding myself it wasn't on the other team's net.
That's right. It was on his. It was an own goal.
Yes. But, I mean, 5 out of 6 points. So, you know, that hasn't affected them. Maybe that's the product of being so young and the young legs. But, yeah, I mean, this will be a good test this weekend. But again, I wouldn't put too much into the results of one game, and especially Connor Hellebuyck. I mean, I think he's earned himself another start. It sounds like Paul Maurice is going to split the goaltending duties this weekend, and then I think once we get out of this weekend, I fully expect to see Connor Hellebuyck getting the lion's share of the work, at least in the foreseeable future. The Jets' schedule becomes a little more palatable after this weekend. Mm-hmm. I don't think they have their next back-to-back for quite some time. So you can actually ride one goalie, and I think Connor Hellebuyck is the guy, the Philly game aside, who's going to be the one that they're going to go to town with.
Mike, there's not many of us in the city who cover both the Moose and the Jets. You're one of the few. And the question I have for you is, what have you noticed the biggest difference to be covering the NHL from the AHL?
You know, it's, and you hear the players say this all the time, that the difference between the two levels is, it's almost infinitesimal at sometimes, because there's not a whole lot of difference when it comes to the speed of the game, the flow of a game. I think it's just consistency. Guys that are, you know, guys that are on that cusp between full-time duty in the NHL and maybe still stuck in the AHL, it's just a matter of consistency and being able to sort of bring it every night. I think there's a lot more inconsistency you see in the AHL. But in terms of the actual game, I mean, it's why you see guys who go down to the AHL, you know, who maybe veteran players who you expect are going to put up big numbers, or let's just say a Jake Virtanen, you know, with the Canucks, who's struggling, obviously, to crack the lineup with Vancouver. He gets sent down to their farm team and seems invisible there. And that's because it's not an easy league by any stretch of the imagination. And I think what we've seen in the last few years in the AHL is more and more AHL teams are developing the NHL team's identity, just like we're seeing here with the Moose, where it's the exact same system the farm team is playing as the big club. And that is obviously to try and ease the transition when players are going up and down. But as a result, all of the things you see in the NHL game, you're seeing at the AHL level, you know, the same kind of systems, the same defensive systems. It's just as hard to score goals in the AHL as it is in the NHL. And as a result, I think that maybe surprises some people. They think the AHL is going to be a breeze, and it really isn't.
Mike McIntyre, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Mike covers the Manitoba Moose and the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Free Press. Mike, as we enter tonight's action, the Moose playing in Tucson tonight. They're 7-6-0-1 on the season so far. Are you impressed that the Moose have sort of been able to keep their heads above water, considering just how many of the players that started the season in Manitoba are now playing for the big club in Winnipeg due to the rash of injuries the Jets have suffered? I mean, sort of, you know, from my perspective, and I certainly am not as close to the team as you are, it is impressive that they have been able to tread water with all the call-ups that they have seen.
It is. I think a bit of a product of that is the Moose got off to a great start this year. They won 6 of their first 10. They had a home-friendly schedule. I think, 6 of those first 10 were at home. And the Moose have played very well at the MTS Center, where I've seen them in action. But you're right, they've been decimated, not unlike the Jets. And it's a byproduct of what's happened with the Jets. It's translated to the Moose. I mean, look at the Jets roster right now. They have 5 players up with the big club that all started the year with the Moose: Patan, Dano, Kopp, Howden, and DeLeo. Julian Melchiori was up with the Jets for a stint as well. And in addition to all that, guys, the Moose have actually had a bad run of injuries as well on top of all these call-ups. Patrice Cormier, their captain, he's been out a few weeks now. Scott Kosmachuk, who got off to a great start, he's back now in the last couple games, but he missed a stretch. Brendan Kitchen, who is probably their most offensive defenseman, he broke his hand in the first game of the season and missed about 10. He's just come back on this road trip. Brian Strait, who some Jets fans may remember as a depth signing that some thought might push for work with the Jets this year, he had a tough training camp and ended up getting sent down to the Moose, but he got hurt early in the year for the Moose, and they've been without him. So the Moose are really being held together by duct tape and Band-Aids. They've had to sign a ton of guys from the ECHL. They got a bunch of guys on amateur tryouts. So they've struggled a little bit because they've had a tough schedule. They're on a 5-game road trip right now. They're 1-3. They're playing again tonight in Tucson. Tucson is the best team in the AHL right now. I think they've only got one loss in their first 11 games, one regulation loss. The Moose, though, they actually outshot them last night, something like 42-24. They ended up losing 5-2. One of those goals was an empty netter. But, yeah, I mean, the Moose, I think, and again, it goes back to what I said earlier about playing the same sort of system as the Jets. They want to be a team that no matter who's in their lineup, they're going to look the same night in and night out. And I think Pascal Vincent is really bringing that identity to the team, and it is paying off in the standings.
Mike, wanted to ask you about Jack Roslovic. A lot of Jets fans are getting pretty excited about Jack Roslovic and you know, his potential. He's got 11 points in 14 games. He was the second Jets first-round pick in 2015, decided to leave college hockey and turn pro. A lot of people thought he might, myself included, thought he might play in the Ontario Hockey League this year with the London Knights. What's impressed you most about Jack Roslovic's game so far in the American Hockey League?
Well, there's really a sense of calmness to his game. You see it. I mean, he, not unlike Kyle Connor to some degree, and maybe as he gets that college background, you know, when guys have played, you know, they've played against men already in their college career, even if it was just for one season. You know, I think there's a maturity there that you see on the ice, and then you also see it off the ice. He's very soft. He's not unlike Kyle Connor in a lot of ways, very soft-spoken, not, you know, won't go on and on talking your ear off, but you get the sense that he's very hockey smart, and I think you guys would know this better than anybody. I mean, when the Jets have talked about who they draft, they're often looking not just for the on-ice skills, but the hockey IQ. That's always been a big proponent of Kevin Cheveldayoff and his team, and I think they've got another guy with a very high hockey IQ in Jack Roslovic. He doesn't need a lot of room to make things happen. He's got a great shot. He's been really lethal on the power play for the Moose, especially. He actually got off to a fantastic start. I think he had 10 of those points in the first 8 or 9 games, and he's tailed off a bit as the team has as well. And I think that's going to be the biggest challenge for Jack Roslovic, is adjusting from, say, a college-type schedule to an AHL schedule. That being said, and Roslovic has mentioned this to me a couple times, that the AHL schedule is not totally unlike a college schedule, in that it tends to be very heavy, games on weekends, a lot of practice time during the week. Of course, they play a slightly shorter schedule in the A than they do in the NHL. So I think this is going to be a good year for him to get his feet wet in the pro game, and he absolutely looks like a potential, you know, impact player for the Jets. Maybe not next season. You know, he might need a couple years at the AHL to sort of really get the game under him, but he's a guy, and when everybody talks about the Evander Kane, you know, trade, I think a lot of people forget that he was another piece of that, correct? Mm-hmm. I mean, he was that extra draft pick.
Yep.
And as good as that trade already looks, I mean, they got another guy, Brendan Lemieux, of course, who's done some good things with the Moose already this season. If Brendan Lemieux and Jack Roslovic can eventually become NHL players, I mean, my goodness, what already looks like a one-sided trade becomes absolute highway robbery.
Well, Mike, that was my question to you. Was one player who's impressed me, because he was out since the Young Stars tournament, missed most of training camp, and last year he was the last cut, he was the last assignment from the Jets training camp. So what have you thought about Brendan Lemieux's game? Because I, like I said, I watch him in practice, I watch him in games, and he just continues to impress me, especially now that he seems to have found his legs.
He does, and you've seen it in practice as well. There's a real work ethic there to him that I've always been impressed. He's often the last guy off the ice at practice, and he'll actually stay out lots of times. One of the things he loves to do is park himself in front of the net and tip pucks, and we've asked him about that, and he said that's something he did in junior a lot, and he's really tried to hone that skill. He says nowadays, of course, it's so hard to score goals. Cleanly, to beat goalies clean, you got to get those tips, those deflections. And he's really trying to establish himself as that big net front presence who can tip goals. He's been effective on the power play for the Moose as well. And I can't help but sort of envision, whether it's in a year or two from now, seeing him potentially on the Jets playing that role as a bottom six guy, but who also has the scoring touch, can really agitate teams, can get in front of the net, you know, win those hard battles, and have that really, really good hand-eye coordination, with tipping pucks home, and I think he could score a lot of goals that way. You know, a lot of people hope that he could be the Andrew Shaw type, agitator slash scorer with the Jets someday, and I think that's the kind of role that they envision for him. He may also need a year or two more of seasoning, but he's got all the elements for sure to be a complete player at the NHL level.
Mike McIntyre covers the Manitoba Moose and the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Free Press. Mike, really appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
All the best. Anytime, guys.
Take care, Mike. We'll try to stay out of trouble here.
Yeah. Be on your best behavior.
Easier said than done.
Thanks,
bro, Mike.
Take
appreciate care. It. Let's head to break. When we come back, we continue our ranking of Mark Scheifele among the NHL's best centermen. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the Curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Down low, out in front, a shot, they score! Ehlers to Wheeler, out in front for Scheifele, a one-timer at the side of the net.
Malkin has a man wide open, Crosby shooting, they score! Welcome back, Sid.
Perry brings it in front, Getzlaf scores!
I gotta believe Getzlaf gave him a little bit of a yell, and this time Lehtinen is defenseless. It's a slam-dunk goal for Getzlaf.
Here's Sagan, Adam Sagan's got Cody Egan. Welcome, he scores!
Sagan, Getzlaf, Crosby, Scheifele. Where does Mark Scheifele rank among the NHL's best centermen? That's the topic that we are bandying about on today's Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome back to the program. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Of course, you're looking for a place to watch tonight's game. If you're looking for a place to watch tomorrow afternoon's game, Bernstein's Deli, big screen TVs, full volume, great drink specials. Check them out, Bernstein's Deli on Cordon and Lanark. Continuing our conversation about Mark Scheifele among the NHL's best centermen, we previously covered three teams, the Rangers, the Capitals, and the Penguins. So far, we have Crosby, Backstrom, Scheifele, Malkin. That's how Ezzy has it. Among the NHL's best centermen. Dave has Scheifele behind Malkin still, but that's the only divergence so far. We move on to the New Jersey Devils, where their top two centermen would be Travis Zajac and Adam Henrique.
Right.
Anybody have Zajac or Henrique above Mark Scheifele?
No, I don't, but you know, you guys know I'm a big Devils fan, and Travis Zajac and Adam Henrique are both excellent defensemen, and I think Travis Zajac, I think, has been re-energized by having a guy like Taylor Hall on his wing, and it's unfortunate that Taylor Hall, Drew, is going to be out for the next 3 to 4 weeks, but certainly Mark Scheifele is better offensively than both those players. I mean, Henrique was a great junior player, and he's been a good second-line centerman for the Devils this year, playing with Mike Camilleri there on the second line, but I'm going to take Mark Scheifele over both Zajac and Henrique.
Yeah, I can't argue that one. I mean, again, defensively, they're very good.
Yep.
Zajac has some nice hands, but I mean, I'm going with Scheifele.
And, Dave, Zajac's best years were when he had Zach Parise on his wing, so his best offensive years are probably behind him, but he's still a very good center, good Winnipeg boy.
I think this one will be an interesting one. It's to Philadelphia, where we ask about Claude Giroux and Sean Couturier.
Yeah, well, I mean, Scheifele, I'm going to take over Couturier. I mean, how many times, how many years have we been talking about the Scheifele versus Couturier? Like, I mean, Couturier is a better face-off guy. Couturier is better defensively. But Mark Scheifele is probably going to score 85 or 90 points this year.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he's better offensively than Couturier. And I realize Couturier might have got the best of Scheifele in Thursday night's game, Dave, with the Flyers beating the Jets and Couturier getting that first goal. But Claude Giroux versus Scheifele is an interesting one to me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's tough for me to say that at this stage in Mark Scheifele's career, he's better than Claude Giroux. I mean, Claude Giroux is a guy that's put up some big offensive numbers in his career. I'm gonna say draw on that one.
You can't say draw, Ezzy. We've already clearly outlined the rules that there is no fence sitting, because if there was fence sitting, it wouldn't make
for interesting
radio.
Okay, then I'll take Scheifele over Giroux.
So you're taking Mark Scheifele over Claude Giroux.
Sure,
Dave.
Wow, this is a tough one.
This is one of the tough ones in the league.
You know what? I'm with Ezzy. I'm going with Scheifele over Couturier. Couturier is a very nice player. I mean, it's funny. We'll literally be having this conversation for the rest of their careers because, you know, of the way they were drafted.
Just like we will with Laine and Matthews.
For sure, no question. But I think that, I mean, the only problem with the question, even though I'm the one who came up with it, but the only problem with it is that we just haven't outlined what specifically we're looking for. If we're looking at overall...
Well, yeah, we are. I'm looking at overall because I think you have to factor that in. And I mean, once we get into some of these other guys, I mean, like for example, I have Jonathan Toews over Mark Scheifele. And even though I think Mark Scheifele might end up with more points this year than
sure,
Taves,
yes.
To me, Taves is the best two-way forward in the league.
Right. I would agree. I don't think, yes. We're looking at the, we're not looking just offensively.
Right.
We're not looking just defensively. We're looking at the
total package. Yeah, okay.
Right now, who would you rather
just like
have?
You, Dave, you're the total package of a legal curve.
Uh-huh.
Well, I don't know how to follow up.
Well, considering how negative we are, saying you're the total package of the show.
We're very one-dimensional.
It's sort of a left-handed compliment.
Okay, all right. Well, I'm on the left side today, so that's mine. I'm going to go with Scheifele over Giroux.
I think
Mark Scheifele is going to continue to take that step this year. And right now he's showing that he's on fire. I mean, he really is in the conversation with the top players in this league right now. So, I mean, I'm going with Scheifele over Giroux.
So you both had Mark Scheifele over Claude Giroux.
Yep.
I'm going to say just by a small margin.
A smidgen, if you will?
A smidgen. Okay. I mean, I have them very equal. And I mean, some people listening might think we're crazy for picking Scheifele over Giroux. But when you look at what Scheifele's done in the last year, I mean, it's pretty hard not to say that he's in the conversation, certainly as a top 15 centerman in the league.
Moving to Columbus, Brandon Dubinsky.
Yeah.
Anybody?
Well,
I mean,
well, he's had a horrible start to the season. I think he's got 5 or 6 points right now.
Yeah.
And I know that because I took him to my hockey pool. But, I mean, Scheifele's a better centerman than Dubinsky.
Right. I mean, I think that one doesn't take a lot of conversation on that one. Carolina, their top two centermen would be Victor Rask, who's sort of unknown.
He's good player.
Good player, but a little bit unknown.
2 points last night.
And Jordan Staal, certainly much, much better known than Victor Rask is.
Yeah, and, you know, you got to give the Carolina Hurricanes credit. They've righted the ship, Drew. You look at the way Sebastian Aho has played with Teuvo Teravainen and a couple of Finns there. I mean, Scheifele's better than Staal and Rask, in my opinion.
Yep, I think we're going right now, so I'm going with Scheifele.
Rask is a very good player, very dynamic offensively. It's his second year in the league now, and underrated centerman for sure.
The New York Islanders have a centerman named John Tavares.
Right. Well, stop right there. Scheifele's not better than Tavares.
Yeah, I'm with Ez. It's not even
a question at this point.
No, Tavares is top 5 center in the league.
Okay. Well, then I'm going to put John Tavares down on my little spreadsheet, so we're keeping track of all this. That's the end of the.
I'm willing to hear the argument. But, I mean, when you're talking about John Tavares, you know, 2009 first overall pick, I realize the Islanders are struggling right now, guys.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, come on, you're talking about a guy that's going to be on the Canadian Olympic and World Cup of hockey teams for the next 10 years, right?
You would think so. But Mark Scheifele could very well also be
sure.
on those teams for the next,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, fair enough. Scheifele should, you know, this is another segment, you know, coming up here. If the NHL decides to participate in the 2018 Olympics, I absolutely think Mark Scheifele should be on Team Canada.
Well, that's something obviously the time will tell if they end up participating in those Olympic Games in Pyeongchang, South Korea. That's the end of the Metropolitan Division. A quick recap because we have Craig Button joining us at the bottom of the hour. So far, Ezzy, you have John Tavares, Sidney Crosby, Nicholas Backstrom, Mark Scheifele, and you have Scheifele over Malkin. So right now, Scheifele would be the 4th best of the centermen when looking at the Metropolitan Division.
Right. And, you know, we're going to go over more teams.
We're
I went through the teams before the show, Drew, and I have Scheifele somewhere in between 10 and 15.
Well, okay. Well,
I don't know if I would say.
Don't get too far ahead of yourself. We're going to break it all down. And, Dave, you have Scheifele 5th because you have Malkin ahead of Scheifele,
right,
along with Backstrom, Crosby, and Tavares. We're going to come back to that after the Craig Button interview. That's coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.